Habitat for Humanity of Greater Cincinnati is taking a new approach to its work, stepping up construction to build more homes more quickly. You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss the strategy, the reasons behind it, and the impact it could have are Habitat for Humanity of Greater Cincinnati President and CEO, Joe Hansbauer. Thanks for being here, Joe.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
And Cincinnati City Council Member Evan Nolan. Thank you for being here.
Lucy, thank you for having me.
So, Councilmember Nolan, a report issued in March by the National Low Income Housing Coalition and the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio found nearly half of Ohio's renters are paying more than they can afford on rent. Does that mirror what we're seeing in Cincinnati?
Not only does it mirror what we're seeing in Cincinnati, but it's just sort of the tip of the iceberg for what we're experiencing here. The increase in home and rent prices has been an issue nationally, and here in Cincinnati, we have felt it more strongly than across the nation. And unfortunately, we're at the top of the list when it comes to the increases in the rent prices and a lot of similar measures. And so it's a big issue for us, for the greater Cincinnati area, and specifically inside the city limits. And we've been spending a lot of time trying to figure out how to address that.
Yeah. Well, and I would imagine, Councilmember Nolan, that that increases the demand for affordable starter homes. If you're paying all this money in rent, you think, I'd really like to own something. Is that what you're seeing in the city?
Absolutely. Unfortunately, with rent prices going up as much as they have, it's meant less savings. Income wages have not kept up with the increase in home prices. And so folks are spending more money on rent and have less money to save to buy that starter home. And we have not kept up with the starter home production that we really need. And so the home prices have gone up and savings have gone down, and it's created an even larger gap, making it that much more challenging for would-be home buyers to purchase that first home.
Yeah. Joe, with all that demand, how many applications does Habitat for Humanity of Greater Cincinnati get for the homes that you build?
Yeah, so we open applications 4 times a year, and on average, we get 10 applications for every one home that we're going to build. Mm. And so it is an ever-increasing demand for the product all across the region.
Yeah. Well, and Joe, I think most of us think of Habitat for Humanity as this group where families work with volunteers to build the homes the families are going to ultimately own. Has that changed, that model?
It has not, right? So we are still significantly about volunteerism, community building generally, and all of our home buyers do 200 hours of what we call sweat equity on their homes. That becomes the down payment on their home. And so we'll talk a little bit about kind of some of the new approach, but even when we subcontract out the development of these homes, we still are building dozens of homes across the region in which those homeowners will volunteer at.
Yeah. Well, talk to me, Joe, about what you all are doing a little bit differently and why Habitat for Humanity of Greater Cincinnati decided you needed to work differently.
For sure. So in addition to kind of the core work that we do, that scattered infill, build two at a time in existing neighborhoods, we are increasingly doing larger land development deals. So taking 2 to 10 acres, building 8 to 40 homes on a single parcel, it becomes a larger project, but bigger scale. And it's really about leaning in and trying to do what we can to meet that demand, right? And so as we look to scale and become a bigger organization organically, we can carve out a portion of that and work with our partners to subcontract out those homes and build them simultaneously with the ones that we're doing in neighborhoods.
Yeah. And what's the typical cost of the home? I mean, I know there's probably a range depending on the size and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So all in, it costs us about $265,000 to build a home. Our home buyers are getting the Habitat traditional mortgage, 0% interest, 30-year mortgage on the hard costs of the home, which are usually right about $180,000 to $200,000. And then we take a soft second mortgage that makes up the difference between that hard mortgage and the appraised value of the home. It protects the subsidy. So it's a no interest, no payment mortgage that is forgiven over 15 years. So if the family stays there for 15 years, that becomes part of their equity. If they need to or decide to sell their home before that, they're free to do that. We recoup some of that subsidy and then put it back in the ground to create a new opportunity for another family somewhere else.
Okay. We're talking about how Habitat for Humanity is stepping up construction to build more homes more quickly. If you've got questions or comments, give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We did get an email from Steve in Oakley. Steve writes, "It is a stated desire of the city to increase density. This new program and approach by Habitat for Humanity seems to fit that policy model. Last year, Oakley hosted Homerama with homes in excess of $1 million and approaching $2 million. Generous tax abatements were granted for this development, as well as other financial amenities and incentives. It neither produced affordable housing or density. Can Habitat for Humanity expect the same generosity from the city while they achieve the affordability and density that is desired?" So that one's for you, Councilmember Nolan. What kind of, is there financial support of some kind that the city is kicking into this new approach that Habitat's taking?
Yes. Thank you, Lucy. And Steve, thank you for the question. That's very important. And the answer is absolutely. We have been a strong partner alongside Habitat for Humanity to build the homes at the affordability levels that are needed the most. To address sort of the issue that Steve raised there, I think of it as almost like a game of musical chairs, and we have more people than we have homes available in the city of Cincinnati, and we're growing. For the first time in six decades, our population is now on the way up, and so we need to find a way to incentivize the building more housing. And there is a gap between the cost to build the home and the market value for a home, and an even larger gap between that market value and what our residents are able to pay at the income levels they're at today. Wage growth has not kept up with the inflation in home prices and in building supplies. So getting back to the musical chairs, we need to be building housing across the income spectrum. If you only build housing at one particular area, say at the 0 to 30% AMI, then those folks at higher income levels are acquiring those other properties, maybe as investment properties, maybe to live in them, and driving those prices up. And now you've created a gap between the most affordable housing and that next level. You have to continue to build housing along the pricing spectrum. And because of that gap between the price to build and what the market is and what our residents are able to pay, we really need to incentivize the development of housing across the spectrum. Those lower income levels are where it is needed the most. There's no question about that. And Habitat for Humanity is doing that work, and we're happy to support them.
Yeah. Councilmember Nolan, can you talk a little bit more about what the city's been doing to encourage more development of affordable both rental properties, rental housing, and also whether there's an effort to encourage the construction of more affordable for sale homes too? What's the city doing with all that?
Yeah, good question. Years ago, it started under the leadership of Mayor Cranley, and Mayor Aftab has really stepped up our commitment to investing in affordable housing. And so we created the Affordable Housing Leverage Fund, where we partner with the Cincinnati Development Fund to manage those dollars. Hamilton County was nice enough to put $30 million of their ARPA funds as seed funding for that. We've put in a significant amount of money, and on an ongoing basis, we commit the tax revenue that we get from short-term rentals, your Airbnb and Vrbo, proceeds to that fund. We also have $5 million in our annual waterfall. Any money that is left over at the end of the year, that's a top priority that we put $5 million more into that. Similar to that, we have also recently created what's called the Neighborhood Development Fund. This is replacing what was an alphabet soup of programs that existed before, NCCIP, NBDIP, NOFA, QuickStrike, where applicants who are looking to develop, not just housing, but all sorts of development across the city can apply for funds. So Habitat previously had reached out to the city and applied for QuickStrike funding, and that's for a very specific use. What we want is for organizations like Habitat to partner with the city and with CDF, and to sit down and have one conversation, one application, to be more efficient. That's sort of our job as a city and on council, to create those opportunities, to make those resources available, and to deploy them as efficiently as possible.
Kind of one-stop shopping. That's the idea. Well, Joe, I know you had a groundbreaking last month for development over the Rhine. Tell us about that development in particular and what makes it different from what Habitat's done in the past.
Yeah, so it's a little bit of a scale development. So it's one small city block. We have one rehab and eight new homes that will be under construction there in the Mohawk District of Northern Over the Rhine. And we are partnering with a general contractor to build those houses on our behalf. So we own the land, we own the development, we own the design, the permitting, and then we hand those plans to a GC to get them out of the ground. And what it allows us to do is to smooth out some of the lumpiness that comes from project development. So if we need to bring on staff to develop a cohort of homes, and then there isn't a project or funding available the next year, you got to figure out how to keep those folks busy. And so this allows us to scale, to go from kind of an organization building 20 houses a year to an organization building 30, and then we can kind of level off their staff up to be that size. So it's our first project of that model that will come out of the ground.
Mm-hmm. And will the sweat equity still be part of that, even with a general contractor?
For sure. Now, there will be opportunity certainly on site for them to participate in building and being a part of the construction of their own homes. And then they will also volunteer on the building of other Habitat homes in the region.
Yeah. You mentioned, Joe, that Mohawk area development includes the renovation of a home that's already there, a historic home. How often is Habitat renovating properties instead of building new homes from the ground up?
We categorize it in... So generally, the answer is we try to do it as least frequently as possible, especially the historic properties. So those, that were built 100 years ago and have been vacant for 20 years, they're both beautiful and significantly difficult to get back to life. The end result is always beautiful and very enticing for us to do it more. But the reality is it costs us twice as much as it does to build a new one out of the ground. Mm-hmm. So we can help two families instead of one by building new.
Yeah. Well, Councilmember Nolan, a report prepared by the Hamilton County Housing Action Plan team found more than 60% of homes in Hamilton County were built before 1970. 25% of all units were built before 1940. Given what Joe just said about how expensive renovating historic properties could be, properties that aren't quite as old, do you think renovation holds potential for maybe helping to meet the city's housing needs?
Absolutely. There are additional costs that come with renovating a historic property, for sure. There are also different types of tax incentives and tax credits available for those projects, but the gap still exists. As I mentioned earlier, we were a city, and I know the report references the county, but we were declining in population for 60 years, and only as of 2010 did we turn the corner and start growing. But our housing development hasn't caught up. And so whether you're inside city limits or in the county, there are very few new developments where new starter homes are being built. You see lots of neighborhoods where a bunch of homes, like mine in Oakley, were built in the 1920s. But we stopped building homes, and we were focused on blight and remediation. And no matter what part of town you're in, you see lots of empty lots where there are opportunities for Habitat to build. Renovation has to be a part of it. You know, the cost of supplies has gone up so much that if you have a frame that can be utilized and brought back to life, we're hopeful that we can do that. Those empty buildings are also a problem. They're a public safety problem. They can be dangerous if they're not up to code. And it's those are places where sometimes criminal activity persists. And so mm-hmm. we have to address those both from a public safety perspective as well as a home building opportunity.
Yeah. Joe, I know that some neighbors in that Mohawk district raised some concerns last year about that Habitat maybe wasn't building enough parking for the units you were putting in there. How did Habitat address those concerns?
Yeah, certainly there, as we engage the community in our kind of design process, as always, there was a number of changes that we did make to the project, to its design, to its historic nature and character. We also worked with the city to remove two on-street no parking zones to allow for parking on-street in the neighborhood. Before I was at Habitat, I spent 10 years at Findlay Market, and man, the lack of available parking is the absolute problem that people want to have, right? You know what I mean? Like when you get to a point in time where there's too many people in an area and it's too crowded and it's too active and there's nowhere to store cars, that's the problem that you want to have. So if we're heading in that direction, that's a positive. And then there'll be opportunity to, I think, address that as needed in the future.
Yeah. Joe, I want to expand outside the city just a little bit. I know Habitat is building a townhome development in Oxford. You've got a modular home development underway in Latonia Lakes, Kentucky. Can you tell us briefly about those projects?
Yeah, for sure. So we just broke ground 2 days ago on a 31-home development in Oxford on 4.5 acres. It's another example of one of our land development deals. We'll build those 31 houses over the next 18 to 20 months. And then we did set a modular home down in Latonia Lakes 2 weeks ago, our first modular home in the area. We anticipate and expect that we'll be doing a bit more of that. Again, it kind of creates that ability for us to place an order, scale up, build a bunch more homes, and then kind of level off at a larger larger organization size.
Yeah. And where does the sweat equity and volunteer piece of Habitat come into those models, especially the modular homes?
Yeah. So almost always, and certainly in this case, we're also building two new homes in the areas on-site stick built. And so the home buyers of all three are working on those homes. There's also a bit of work prep before the modular home gets set and a bit of work that happens after the modular home gets set. And so there's opportunity for them to participate on their own home in that way.
Yeah. Councilmember Nolan, do you think a modular home development could ever work in Cincinnati?
I hope so. And I look forward to it. I know council has talked about different opportunities, and we've asked the city administration to report back to us on where they see those opportunities within the city limits. And I know the way that council talks about it, that there will be funding available when the right opportunity becomes available. So I hope so. We have to do whatever we can to close that gap on what it costs to build housing, and in particular, owner-occupied structures. So if the change in materials or the process helps us get there, we need to embrace that.
Yeah. Joe, what kind of impact do you think these new strategies could have on, I mean, clearly it's having an impact on what Habitat's doing, but what about the region as a whole in terms of the need we've been talking about?
Yeah, I mean, I always say, you know, if we can help two families, we should figure out a way that we can help four families a year. If we can help four, we should figure out a way to help eight. And that's the trajectory that we're on, right? Like even if we build 100 homes a year, we're not going to singularly solve the affordable housing issue in our region, but we can make a much more significant impact and dent in the challenge. And so that's what we intend to do is get ourselves to a point in time where we're not just helping 15 families a year, that we're building consistently 50 homes a year and scaling. It also has significant impact on community, right? As we scale up and increase our volume, the impact that has, right, if you're coming in and building 40 houses in a neighborhood as opposed to building two, what happens at the street level is significantly different, right? Mm-hmm. And it increases, you know, overall property and community values. Mm-hmm.
Got an email from Kathy. Speaking of community, Kathy writes, I live in Oxford and am thrilled that the Clarence Place project just broke ground and will soon be providing affordable housing in our community. This new building model means that those units will be available sooner than standalone builds. So you've got a fan in Kathy.
That's great.
Councilmember Nolan, what do you think? What kind of impact? Obviously, Cincinnati in the city, the region as a whole, needs thousands and thousands and thousands more housing units. What kind of impact do you think Habitat's new strategies could have on that need?
Yeah, we need to be building housing first and foremost, and we need to be building more affordable housing, and we really need to increase the rate of homeownership. All of those things have been moving in the wrong direction for a long time, and we're starting to figure it out. We're all adapting to the circumstances that we're in. In particular, we've had a homeownership gap between our white homeowners and black homeowners, and that gap has persisted and moved in the wrong direction for too long. And so programs like or organizations like Habitat for Humanity create opportunities to, create homeownership for our black residents in a lot of neighborhoods where that sort of development has not been happening. And so it's one large piece of a significantly larger puzzle that we're all trying to solve together. And it's something that we're glad to do alongside of Habitat and the long list of partners that they've been able to bring to the table because of the good work that they do.
Yeah. Joe, what's the biggest barrier to doing even more?
Opportunity, right? So land availability. We certainly, why we're trying to tell this story, right, is I think we consistently, and people think about Habitat when, they've got a vacant lot that they don't know what to do with, and they, will call Habitat, or they, somebody passes away and they want to donate a single property, and that's awesome, and we still want that to happen. But we also want organizations to begin to think about Habitat when they've got 4 acres of land behind the church that they weren't sure what to do with and hadn't thought about Habitat. That's the kind of scale that we want to be a part of. And so I think finding those opportunities for, where are those parcels, particularly in the city and Hamilton County, that we can find acreage that we can build larger developments, and then funding opportunities, right? So as we increase our scale and our scope, our capital stack gets more complicated. Certainly, continued support from the city of Cincinnati, but it does allow us to unlock things like Welcome Home Ohio and new market tax credits and opportunity zones, single family housing tax credit. And so it is more complicated, but it also allows us to leverage those funding sources that we wouldn't normally be able to.
Okay. Well, I have been talking with Habitat for Humanity of Greater Cincinnati President and CEO Joe Hansbauer and Cincinnati City Council Member Evan Nolan. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lucy.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director today is Ella Rowan. If you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Be sure to tune in tomorrow for the weekly news review. Thanks so much for listening.